form in special relativity. And they, you know, I think a number naturally and very justifiably have a bit of skepticism about it. They don't see it. What's the actual experimental evidence for it? But relativity is very real. And I think one of the best applications and ways of seeing that is there's the GPS, and it's a navigation system. We all know about it. Technology used by millions of people around the planet every single day. Farmers use it to help plant their crops in straight line. They just set the GPS. Their tractors on all auto part to go in a straight line and then plant. Yes?
We have a guy right near Listowel, which is in the middle of nowhere, and he actually plants a maize that is multi-fields. It's an Ontario attraction.
Right.
Using GPS. He uses corn. Yeah. So, like, for example, he had the map of the world a few years ago, and then a year before that, he had the Ontario emblem, and you had to actually walk through this Ontario emblem all planted by GPS.
Oh, really? Wow, I did not know this. Yes, Andrea.
The other thing that it's used for is there are actually, of a farmer's field, there would be different mineral and organic contents. Yeah. And so when you drive across, because actually that knowledge is stored.
Right.
And you plant more in the part that can handle it, less in the part you fertilize with it, and you can plant your field that way. So it's not just a straight line, it's actually, you know, the best chance of the grain of the wheat growing because of biology and geology. So it's very multidisciplinary.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hikers use it to help keep on the trails. Taxi drivers use it. If you ever go in a car and you see the little computer screen and computer map of the city and have a dot representing the car and the voices turn left at the next intersection and so forth, that's satellite navigation. That uses GPS. Yes.
I was going to say there's a watch by Timex now that uses GPS, and you can actually determine your speed by using distance that calculates using GPS and time you want.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I run, and I know some runners, long distance runners, that have that GPS watch. So.
There's some of the palm.
Absolutely. And finally, planes use it. Park, commercial parks use it to help land when they navigate. So it's used everywhere. It's everywhere. So this presentation, actually, one other thing I haven't mentioned, but from time to time we go around schools, mainly in Ontario, but occasionally throughout Canada, and that's our Physica Fantastica tour. I'm not sure where the next one will be, but we had one for the first half of this year. And I gave pretty much this presentation about to give to you now at probably about 20 different schools. This is me giving one at Markfield Secondary College in New York, or just north of Toronto. And this is actually on Manitoulin Island giving a presentation. So that's a list of the places where we have been. And so this is something I guess I've sort of been doing at a number of schools. And only we go into grade 11 and 12 physics classes and talk about. Talk about modern physics. Okay.
It says you're running
on
battery.
Oh, okay. I'll just see how much. It should be fine. Yeah, it will be fine. So this is where the talk came from, and so the GPS. Right above us now are 24 satellites. They're all the GPS satellites, and they're 20,000 kilometers above us. And they're orbiting around the Earth once every 12 hours, and they're all in different orbits. And all the time, continually, they're emitting radio waves. And if you have a GPS receiver, and again, Jeffrey said you can get them as watches. You can go to a hiking store, you can go into Canadian Tire, you can buy them for $200. And some schools even have them with their geography department, so they're not incredibly exotic items. And if you have one of those, you pick up the signals from all the GPS satellites up in the sky, all the radio waves, or more precisely, all the ones that are actually above where your horizon, where you can actually have a direct line of sight to, a direct line to. And basically, the idea is by picking up signals from multiple satellites, you can figure out how far you are away from this satellite, and that satellite, and then that satellite. And then you can kind of do some sort of triangulation process. You can figure out more and more precisely where you are. And you can do that around to within about a meter. anywhere on the planet. And I've always got the satellites rigged up so that pretty much whenever you are around the planet, you always have enough satellites above the horizon from where you are that you can actually do this triangulation process. So, interesting enough, it's the US military that owns it. They, as you can see, it'd be very useful for the soldiers to know where they are. And they've been working on it in the 70s and the 80s. I think it was around about mid-1990s that it actually got fully operational. So it's kind of unique. There's just one of them up there at the moment. And it's kind of interesting that it's leaked out into the commercial, non-military public world. And everyone uses that. The European Union is actually starting to, they're actually working on building, getting up their own rival one. Because if the US military one day decided just to turn it off, then it would just be catastrophic economically if they do it. So how does it work? So what it works is really you can figure out so it works really on timing. So we have GPS satellite up there. It's sending out a radio wave, and right here we pick it up. Well, what it works on is also the signal that gets sent out. It has a message or contains information and tells you exactly the time, precisely the time it was sent from the GPS satellite. So say you're down here on Earth, you basically figure out how far you are away from that satellite by working on the timing. So the GPS satellite might send a signal at exactly 12 noon. And it actually tells you that in the radio wave you pick up. So you have the GPS receiver, you pick up the radio wave signal. It says, this was sent from this particular satellite, and it tells you where it was. And it was sent exactly 12 noon. And you have your GPS receiver, and it has a clock in it, and the clock might read 12:01. So if it was sent from the radio wave, you know exactly 12 noon. It got down to you at 12:01. Then it took 1 minute to get from the satellite to you, so you know you're 1 minute away from the satellite. But how quickly was the radio waves moving? How were they traveling at? Well, they're just electromagnetic radiation. Pretty much they were traveling through empty space, going from the satellite to you. So light travels through empty space at the speed of light, and it's not just visible light, it's all forms of electromagnetic radiation. Gamma rays, X-rays, microwaves, radio waves. So the radio waves that travel from the radio station tower to you pretty much travel close to the speed of light, although it's through the atmosphere, so it's not a vacuum. But to a good approximation, the speed that the signals were traveling at was the speed of light. And we know the time it took, so if you find out the distance of how far away are away from the satellite, we just multiply the time difference by the speed, 3 by 10 to the 8 meters per second, or 300,000 kilometers per second, and we find out the distance, how far we are away from one satellite. Now, if you think about one satellite, you think of that as being one sort of central point, and think about all the points that are the same distance away from that satellite, that all the points actually form the surface of a sphere or a ball. So if we just get information from one satellite, then we know we're somewhere on the surface of a sphere that has a certain radius of the distance that we know we are away from the satellite. So we don't know exactly where we are. It's kind of hard to draw a sphere on the page, but we can actually do a circle. So all of these points here, obviously, are the same distance away from the satellite. So if we just get information from one satellite, it could be any one of these points. Well, we probably know we're a bit more precisely than that, because we know we're not in the middle of floating in the middle of outer space, so we know we're somewhere around here. So what we do is repeat the process, find out how far we are away from two satellites. Then what we know is we're at the intersection of two spheres, or the intersection of two circles. So you can see we've already narrowed down where we are. And if you repeat the process one more time, essentially, then you actually know where you are. So you roughly need to get information from three satellites to actually know, pinpoint where you are on the surface of the Earth. And yes?
Is this technology used by the space program? Can they triangulate position in outer space using these satellites?
Can, absolutely. It's nothing, yeah, they could in principle. I don't know if they do. That's a good question. I don't know if they do, but it's nothing special about the surface of the Earth. But
just give you an
idea. Yeah.
You need a fourth one for height, right?
So technically speaking, yeah. Well, technically speaking, they actually use four satellites, but the fourth one essentially is used as a check. Because the clocks on the GPS, so one of the main reason why it does work, you've actually, the clocks on these GPS satellites, they have rubidium atomic clocks. They have incredibly, some of the most accurate clocks on the planet. And so if you had an atomic clock in your handheld unit, then you would just need three satellites and not four. But they use four essentially because you don't have an atomic clock. But an intuitive reason, if you did have an atomic clock here, you would just need three. And one intuitive way of seeing that is to find out where you are, you want to know three coordinates, three bits of information. You want to know your longitude, how far you are around from Greenwich Zero longitude. You want to know your latitude, how high you are above or below the equator. And you want to know your altitude, just how high you are above sea level or far below. And so you want to get three coordinates. You get those three coordinates, bam, you pinpoint wherever you are on the planet. And three coordinates, three bits of information, you need three satellites.
I'm
not sure. That it might actually depend on the time, because if you actually look at the orbits the satellites are going, they're these complicated things that overlap each other, they're in different planes and so forth. So it could well be that at different times there are different numbers of satellites available above the horizon. But effectively you only need three. Yeah. Yeah, but they may well pick up more than that. That's fine. If it's extra information. So that's really basically how it works, the triangulation process. Three satellites, three bits of information. Again, it's lots and lots of uses. So where does so we haven't talked about Einstein, and the point is it works on really, really precise timing, knowing precisely the time that the signal was sent from the satellite, knowing precisely the time of the signal that you received it. But here's where Einstein comes in. So we all know the time dilation formula. And this is the time in some moving frame, and this is gamma factor, Lorentz factor. I think of it as a time slowdown factor. And this is kind of the weirdness factor of special relativity. We've seen that. And again, if you plot a graph of gamma versus v, then where velocity is 0, it's 1. So that means there's no time slowdown factor. So the t naught equals t. Nothing strange is happening. And this is perfectly in line with what we experience in everyday life. If you don't see my time as being slowed down. But as you actually get the time greater and greater and greater, or the speed greater and greater and greater, then the time, actually, this time slowdown factor gets more and more pronounced. So that by the time you get up to the speed of c, then it's actually infinitely large. You get infinitely slowed down in time. So this is a time dilation formula. And the point is satellites, these GPS satellites that are right above us now, 20,000 kilometers above it, they are moving relative to us 4 kilometers every single second. So what that means is they're moving at this, well, it's an appreciable speed, and so we actually see their time as being slowed down. So when the GPS satellite is giving us the time signal saying, yes, this signal was sent at exactly 12 noon, this was sent at 12.01, 12.02, 12.03. They're actually going to be off. So from our perspective, they're slow. So it might actually be that the GPS signal is saying, look, this satellite or this message signal was sent at exactly 12 noon. But it's moving clock, so it's running slowly from our reference frame. And so it's actually being sent at not that time, but a later time, because it's slow. So from our point of view, the GPS clock are exactly like a malfunctioning clock that was made badly in the factory, so it just runs slowly and gets out of time. It just keeps bad time. And so we need to actually correct for that bad time with our GPS receiver. And if you don't, then the time that you think that the signal took to get from you to the satellite to you will be off, and then you'll be off with the distance measure you made from the satellite, and then you'll be off with where you think you are on the surface of the Earth. And so the whole system won't work. So Here's a question. So what I do, I normally talk about this to the students, and I say, okay, kids, get out your calculator. Does anyone actually have a calculator here? Okay, great. Good. So if you don't, then you can either do this calculation in your head, or you can watch a person with a calculator. So I started out going to schools, and I told kids, okay, V is 4 kilometers per second. This is the time dilation formula. Calculate what gamma is for me. And so I found that the kids duly put the numbers in the calculator, and then they came, always about 99.9% of the kids came back with the answer, it's 1. And it turns out that even though V is, what's from our perspective, it's fairly large, 4 kilometers every single second, obviously compared to the speed of light, it's slower. So the relativist effect is very, very small. It's very, very real, but it's very small. And really, V squared over C squared comes out to be something like, I think it's 10 to the minus 10. 10 to the minus 10 to the 10 to the minus 11. So it's just really small. Basically, their calculators could not handle it. So they came to be 1 minus an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly small number. And their calculators would just give back 1. And so they were just basically... So I guess in some level they knew that was true, but they were just plugging the numbers in and saying, well, my calculator says it's 1, it's 1. So I realized there was a problem there. So then I introduced something called the binomial approximation. And then, so what I started telling kids was, okay, well, this is kind of complicated here. It's got this square root, so, you know, it's tough to calculate. So what it turns out is, and trust me on this one, that if you know something called the binomial expansion, I found maybe one or two kids in each class knew about that. I said, you don't need to know the details. That when this velocity is much less than the speed of light, then you know that this, we can get rid of the square root, and that gamma is actually approximately equal to this here, v squared divided by 2 multiplied by c squared. So, and generally I found if I said that with enough conviction, and I know it's a PhD physicist that was coming in, they believed me about that. But even if they didn't, you could actually, you could get your calculator out, you could plot a graph of this versus V, and you could actually plot a graph of this versus V. And initially for small values of V, the graphs will be very much the same. And so you can show that that's one way you can see that's a good approximation. So then what I told kids, and I've actually got the next page, a derivation of what I'm doing, but for the moment I said, okay kids, trust me, okay kids. So initially I got them to calculate 1 plus v squared divided by 2 c squared, but then I had the same problem. So again, 99% of kids were coming back, and it's 1 plus, and it's an incredibly small number, and the calculators couldn't handle it, so they just gave me 1. So they're all coming back saying 1, it's 1, it's 1, it's the third time dilation, stuff like that, and so they were just blindly believing their calculators. And so then I eventually figured out, okay, just calculate v squared divided by c squared, divided by 2 times c squared, and that's the relativistic correction factor. So that is really the deviation you see for relativity. So if everyone that has a calculator, if you could get that out now and calculate that. If you don't have a calculator, get an estimate for it. Order of magnitude estimate will be fine. And then check it with the people around you. Sorry? Well, verify it. It could be a trick answer. Which one though?
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Oh really?
It's all about
Oh really? I didn't know that. Okay, thanks.
Say that again.
James Bond, Tomorrow Never Dies, is a movie where the villain actually manipulates the GPS system so that a war starts.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
It's a little 6 years old. Tomorrow Never Dies. James Bond, Tomorrow Never Dies. Who's the
female star?
No, Halle Berry, that's
Terry
Hatcher. It's the one, it's the
Terry
one
Hatcher.
Where it's a
just for Halle Berry.
It's all about a media mogul guy who wants to get his newspaper.
Okay, does anyone have an answer? Okay, so that's the answer. So what I generally found, I did this kind of about half the students in every class were getting this. Those that didn't, they just got the units messed up. So they were actually used to measuring C in meters per second. So they would actually plug in 4 for V, but then 3 by 10 to the 8 meters, 3 by 10 to the 8 there. So that would be actually out by a factor of a million. So I would go around, walk around. And then I found that pretty much after I said, okay, make sure the units in the denominator and numerator are right, most people got that. So that was good. And so I didn't tell this to the kids, but I just went through the binomial expansion. Many of you will know that. So the binomial expansion. So we have gamma, and we just represent that instead of 1 divided by the square root of 1 minus b squared divided by c squared. Then you can actually represent that in this form here. This is 1 minus b squared divided by c squared to the power minus 1/2. And then the binomial expansion, so remember back to maybe did this at university or in school, or maybe actually found a few teachers that actually do teach their students this in calculus. But the binomial expansion says that 1 plus x all to the power n equals 1 plus n multiplied by x plus n minus 1 divided by 2 factorial multiplied by x squared, and then there's blah, 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 extra terms there. But, so if we actually look at this and look at this, we can compare the two. We see they're actually equivalent if we've got the n there and a minus 1/2 there, if n equals minus 1/2. And they're actually equivalent. We've got the plus there and the minus sign. We actually could put a plus sign in front of the negative sign and make it 1 plus minus b squared divided by c squared. And so they're equivalent if x equals minus b squared divided by c squared. So actually this is a form that we can actually use the binomial expansion formula for. But importantly, what we have is v is much less than the speed of light. So that v squared divided by c squared is way, way, way less than 1. And because of that, all these terms here, and the x cubed term, and the x to the power 4 term, they're just really, really tiny. And so, for example, this term, the second one, is something like the order of 10 to the minus 20. It's way, way, way smaller. And all the cubed term and the quartic term, they're much, much smaller than the other one. So we can just forget about that. And we can just say, we just use the first one. So we can say that 1 plus x to the n, in this case, is approximately equal to 1 plus nx. And then we do that, we just actually substitute in the values that we have. So one plus minus 1/2, and then x is minus v squared divided by c squared. The two minuses cancel each other out, and we get 1 plus 2v squared divided by c squared. So this is where it actually comes from. So again, I don't go into this detail with the kids. I just say, trust me, I'm a theoretical physicist, and most of them seem to.
Which would you trust more, a lawyer or a theoretical physicist?
Oh. Okay. Well, I mean, lawyers did not invent the GPS. Okay, so you gave me the answer, and this was 8.89 by 10 to the minus 11. Let's round it up to 10 to the minus 10. And so that's the time slowdown factor. That's telling you how much the GPS clocks are ticking slowly by. That tells you by, for every 1 second they tick, tick, we say they're running slowly from our reference frame, 1 second plus this amount actually ticks. So this is kind of what we have to actually correct for, sort of take off or add on with the GPS. So this is what this is. But the point is, if you're off and you have this time error, or this leads to... So imagine you don't correct for it. You forget about special relativity. You think it's just a theory. You know, this doesn't matter. Then if you actually don't, with your GPS receiver, you don't kind of correct for this, you realize, hey, this signal was not sent from the satellite at 12 noon, but it was sent from a slightly later time because it's the clock is ticking slowly, so it's giving me a slightly artificial slow time, then what this means is this will give you a distance error and the rough in where you think you are. And how much is that in second? Well, because if you have a really small error in your time because you're not taking into account the clock is ticking slightly slowly, then you've actually, the error actually gets really magnified. And it gets magnified because you actually, because in a small amount of time, light can travel very, very far. So if you're actually off in a small amount of time, because you're getting the signal that travels a radio wave through empty space at the speed of light, you're actually going to be off by a large distance. You're actually going to be off by thinking where you are by roughly the same amount of distance that corresponds to how far light travels in this amount of time. And so the next thing I do with kids, so you know the answer off the top of your head, but you could play along with me here. What I'd like you to do now is to go through that and find out the answer to that multiple question. What distance error each second does this correspond to? So really what I'm asking is how far light travels in 10 to the minus 10 seconds. So if you could find the answer there, and also think of what misconceptions might lead kids to come up with the two answers that you don't think are right. Yes. The satellites. But first of all, the Earth's rotating around, and the satellite's moving as well. So what we think is the satellite, the easiest way to think that we're stationary, but the satellite are actually rotating. The satellites are actually rotating around the Earth. Yeah. So, but the distance is, okay, an hour. So that's assuming that the satellites are actually correctly above. Yeah, so an hour later, the satellite directly above. Okay. Okay, that's enough time. So the correct answer is 3 centimeters. So, okay. But the point is, the errors accumulate. That's 3 centimeters every single second. And so the thing is, if you're hiking or you're planting a crop or the emblem of Ontario in a cornfield, it's not going to matter if you're off by 3 centimeters. But the point is, if you have a clock, that's 3 centimeters every single second. And that builds up and builds up and builds up. And for every second you don't correct for relativity, it builds up. So if you have a clock, and it's every second it's off by 1/10 of a second, and if you have a clock that's slow, slightly slow, but you have that clock sitting next to another clock, and you just leave them there for a long period of time, like a day or even a year, after you come back, they'll be completely off from each other. The errors will get enhanced. They build upon each other. They sum up. And so that's exactly what happens in the GPS. So Okay, so what I tried to do is then think of the most dramatic example I could to try and illustrate this, and this is what I came up with. And if anyone has a better one, I'd love to hear it. So imagine that you are the pilot of Boeing 747, full of passengers, 300 passengers, and you're landing at Toronto Pearson International Airport in February. And it's a snowstorm, and you cannot see the runway. And like many commercial pilots do, using GPS navigation to help guide you home. There are other navigation systems that are used in conjunction as well, but GPS is definitely one that's many use. Let's pretend that as a pilot, you studied physics, so I'm talking to the students here, and you think that relativity is just a theory, and you know you don't need to worry about it, it's not real, and it's completely impractical. And so somehow you have this magical button on your GPS unit, and you can turn relativity off, you can turn off the relativistic correction on it. And you did that a day ago, because, well, you know, you really knew it didn't matter. And so if you did that a day ago, how far away from the runway would you actually be landing as a result of the error caused by being off with the GPS, assuming you're solely using GPS navigation, and you've neglected the effects of special relativity? So what I'm really asking there is, it's 3 centimeters every single second. How much of an error in one day does that actually add up to? Yes?
I was just going to ask, wouldn't you use the error of each of the 3 satellites and you know, like X plus Y plus L on the grid lanes?
Right, yeah, you would. That wouldn't change it by, this is a very, very rough calculation, yeah. That really wouldn't change it by amount, that would change it by something like a factor of, it would be something like square root of 3, if you add them up independently and randomly. But yeah, you would have to do a more detailed model. But this is just a very, very kind of a crude thing.
Yeah.
So then I tell the kids, okay, go away and calculate that. What distance does that be? So it's really, how many seconds are there in a day? So if you have a calculator, if you could get your calculator out now. If not, if you could just even write down the numerical value and get an estimate for that, order of magnitude estimate. So. So what, 3 centimeters every single second, what error does that correspond to over an entire day of theory accumulating?
3.6.
Sorry?
We hit the error.
Right, yeah. Control tab.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why is the resolution down into like a meter? You said like you can kind of pinpoint your accuracy within about a meter.
Right.
You know, if they got what's correct and stuff like that, is it just the effects of the atmosphere which slows things off that much?
Oh, what? Yeah, it's probably a whole range of things. I'm not sure what the limiting one is. One, the GPS, the atomic clocks are not perfectly accurate. So that would be an error. There's, there would be an error in the atmosphere. So there'd probably be, it's probably some kind of a messy thing, but I'm not sure. There's a number of errors. I'm not sure actually what the.
So I guess my next question is, if you clean that up a little bit, doesn't seem likely.
It doesn't seem likely. Potentially you could, but in most applications, you don't really need to know where you are if you're hiking. Yeah, but certainly, it's probably actually not the atomic clocks limiting error, because they have a few more orders of magnitude accuracy, but it might well be the accuracy of the clocks in your GPS receiver, or things like atmosphere effects. There's a whole lot of subtle effects. It's quite subtle, all the effects they need to. Yes?
As far as I know, the American military has a lot to do with the patent technology data.
Yeah.
The patent technology is set up such that you can't actually use the same level of receivers there.
Okay. Actually, wait. Yeah, sorry, it'll be Gary.
Sure. That's going to actually reduce the precision on.
Sorry, you were saying that.
The patent technology that the American military sent out, they get down to a couple of centimeters.
Oh, okay,
so
right.
They've sent out everybody else, but they patent allow other companies to make.
Yeah. Right.
They don't allow them to make it as good as what they do. Some
right.
Just
yes.
For that reason, so that you can't actually go and buy one as good as the military's.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's
because of course, surprise, surprise, they're not the only people using it. Like, if you don't have, like, I know Iraq, for instance, all their tanks now have these GPS satellites.
Yeah.
And they're running out of the American system, so they don't have that floating around anymore.
Yeah.
That's the main reason why it's so much smaller. They do have the, it is the possibility of doing it better, they just have a little bit of
technology. Right, yeah. Good point. Yes.
As far as I know,
actually,
with the year 2000, I'm sorry. In the year 2000, the American Congress already passed a law allowing commercial airlines, things like that, to use the actual accuracy of the GPS satellite.
No, I know there are some that haven't. There's privacy laws that you have to go with.
But the errors, I think, actually come from the model that has been used inside your GPS receiver, because they have to do this atmospheric correction and different things. Also, day and night situations will be different. They have to take into all things into consideration.
Mm.
And that's what's causing the error.
Yeah.
Also, different manufacturers would be using different models. And that's the
main thing. Okay, yep, thanks for that. Okay. Just keep ignoring that and it'll go away.
Give me a quick question.
Yes.
Per second, is that what you're expected spinning Earth?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So it sounds like you're traveling probably faster around the center of the Earth than what's due.
Oh, there, I mean, no, it's in full kilometers.
Per second.
Relative to it's relative to us.
Okay.
On the surface of the Earth.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so essentially this one, the answer to this question is there are 24 hours in each day. Each of them has 3,600 seconds. Therefore, the area is 3 centimeters multiplied by 24 hours multiplied by 3,600 seconds. And what that gives you is around about 2.5 kilometers per day. So I think it's 2.6 kilometers per day. So every single day that you actually ignore the effects of special relativity, it adds up to that amount. So that means that in the other case, the example we did, you would not be landing on the runway, but you would be landing on a road or a field or a building 2.5 kilometers away. And that's probably not going to be a good thing. So relativity is very, very real. So I will just say that actually it's kind of cool, but actually, in the GPS, it uses both special relativity and general relativity. So there's another effect that actually has to calculate with general relativity. It doesn't take away, it means the special relativity effect is just as real, but there's this other extra effect. And normally I just tell students, okay, there's this other effect of general relativity, but we won't worry about now because that's a lot more complicated. But the basic idea is that actually general relativity causes the clocks on the satellite to run quickly, and that's because gravity actually affects how quickly time passes. And if you have a stronger gravitational field, then time passes more slowly for you. Weaker gravitational field passes more quickly. And the general relativistic effect, actually, it's about 5 times as large as the special relativistic effect. So it actually overwhelms that. So it's about 50,000 nanoseconds per day fast due to general relativity, and then 11,000 nanoseconds per day slow to special relativity. And even though we've been constraining on the smaller one, that's the tractable one, because the mathematics is just kind of too complicated for.
Do you have those nanosecond numbers?
Oh, it's 50,000 nanoseconds per day.
That's
general relativity. So it's. And then 11,000. And obviously that gives you 39,000. Total. And if you actually figure out what that is, that corresponds to about 10 kilometers error per day due to Einstein. Yes, Sean.
Is there a problem with inertial reference frames here? Or do you consider like the satellite moving right with the Earth so that they're in the same frame of reference? Because these things are orbiting the Earth, right? So they're
right. So they're Yeah, I mean, you have to be careful about that, but they're not in the same frame as us because they're moving relative to us at 4 kilometers per second.
That's
so,
not
I mean, you have to be careful, but for the time frame, if you're just looking at them over a small amount of time frame, looking at them instantaneously sending out a signal, then they're just considered to be one, inertial reference frame. But you have to be careful about that, but it works out. One way you can think about them is them switching between a whole bunch of different inertial reference frames. And you can look at things from the perspective of basically one. So, as they go around the globe, they're in one inertial reference frame, they accelerate a bit, they're in another one, they're in another one, another one. And you can kind of look at things from each of the individual inertial reference frames individually and then kind of patch them together, if you like. So you can still do that, but you do have to be careful about looking at how they, we should do full details, how they switch in between, but it works out. So, just one interesting thing about that. So that tells you that, so it's a very, very, very small effect, but that tells you that when I'm sitting down like this, I'm actually in a slightly stronger gravitational field than when I'm standing up, because I'm slightly close to the center of the Earth. And so I actually, due to general relativity, am aging more slowly when I'm sitting down compared to when I'm kind of standing up like this. So if you lay down, So you may have noticed the people in the back row that have been sitting in the back row each week. There's probably some 1/10 of a billionth of a second that you're actually older than the people were sitting down in the front row.
That's a pride.
So I am thinking of opening up an Einstein cosmetic surgery place where you want to really stick people in deep holes close to the center of the Earth as possible. And they would actually.
That'll be over.
That would be different. Yeah. I figured so. That's my entrepreneurial idea. Ship them to Jupiter. We ship them to Jupiter where the gravity is stronger. So, yeah, good point. Okay, so that's the GPS. And actually, I won't go through this because I like to do through Einstein's eyes, but. That's another example. And E equals MC squared, they use them in hospitals with positron emission tomography scans. So, just before lunch. That's a complex question.
We get a demonstration?
During lunch.